And welcome to the ADH Deep Dive, the show that's not about ADHD, but is filled with proof it exists. My name is David J. Mund, and I don't intend for this to be a tradition, but since it happened last week with Molly, I think that we'll do it again this week. I would like to start this episode by popping open a nice can of LaCroix. Beautiful. If you have not seen last week's episode, I highly encourage you. Very good friend of mine on the show, Molly Teesma, a.k.a. Faye Floral, a.k.a. Pompadour Pixie on Instagram. We kind of manifested a bit of a LaCroix collaboration last week. There was a little clip that we posted basically just from the middle of the conversation of our podcast, where we said that we should do some sort of floral collaboration with LaCroix, where she does the LaCroix flavor, like picks a flavor and then builds floral arrangements around it with cut up fruit and stuff. And then I take the photos and do the lights and all that kind of jazz. Sorry, I think this lighting is a bit off. I'm being blinded by my actual key light here. I'm trying to change things up a little bit, as I do every single week. The background is never consistent. I am never happy with how it looks. So I'm just kind of trying stuff out, changing stuff, getting different colored lights. I think we're a little bit too cool with that shot. My God, I'm just being blinded. Also, my lips are extremely chapped, so we're gonna quick pop away to do that real fast. All right, y'all, if you're watching the video version, see that skull? See this? This is not a punk house, it's a punk home banner. All of these things are available at catandcrew.com. That's right, they're the first sponsors. Catandcrew.com, enter the promo code Monday, it's Monday, M-U-N-D-A-Y, to receive 10% off of your final purchase. You can get those koozies, you can get banners, you can get earrings, you can get coasters, you can get skull planters, you can get so many cool pop punk or punk adjacent type things and stuff. This is a dynamite selling point for their website. But yeah, I think it's really cool that they decided to give ADH Deep Dive listeners an exclusive deal, because, you know, it's cool that we're building a little audience here and that you guys get to have some sort of special perks that nobody else gets. So if you aren't familiar with it yet, go to catandcrew.com, enter the promo code Monday, M-U-N-D-A-Y at checkout, get 10% off your final order. Okay, back to the show. All right, now that we have some freshly chapsticked, lip balmed lips, I'm just now realizing in this moment that Chapstick is a brand of lip balm. That Chapstick is not the actual item you're using, but Chapstick is the brand itself. That's wild. What are you doing, Jude? You coming to hang out for the podcast? Hello. So, anyways, yeah, Molly Teesma, Faye Floral, and I did that LaCroix collaboration. We're huge fans of LaCroix. We drink like a case a week, if not more, each of us. We're really, really gunning for that endorsement, sponsorship, support. I don't know. We just want LaCroix to notice us. So if you could, tag Faye Floral and David J. Mund on any posts that you make towards LaCroix, telling them that we love them deeply, dearly, sincerely, and that we would love them to send us free LaCroix. Honestly, that's all we really want, is free LaCroix. I'll take a sip of this. You know, I get some shade from the sparkling water drinkers of the world that I go with the basic flavors, like lemon and lime, but they're classic for a reason. I don't really like doing, I mean, I do like the pamplemousse flavor, but I don't like doing like tangerine. The limoncello and key lime are nice, but they're like a sweet treat. They're not like a daily drink. I like lemon and lime because they're just easy, smooth sippings. Though there are a lot of people out there who say that they don't like LaCroix or sparkling water of any variety because they say it's, quote, crunchy water, static water. It just tastes like it's supposed to be other things. But they're wrong. They just like soda. And that's fine. You can like soda. I like soda. I just have a former addiction to soda, and I would rather not get... Whoa! The chair just sunk down. Whoops. Oh man, if you're watching the video version, I hope that was fun. Anyway, okay, so let's get to the main point of today's episode. Honestly, I'm sitting around the house, stressed out. It's Sunday right now, the day before this episode airs. Because I'm clearly a procrastinator and I'm doing very great at getting better at that. Anyways, I'm stressing about the fact that I need to go out and I need to do some deliveries for some cash. I don't have any shoots coming up this week, so I need to go out and do the Shipts and the DoorDashes and the Grubhubs and all those types of things for supplemental income. And I was down in the dumps about it, kind of bummed me out that I'm going to have to go do that tonight. However, it got me thinking as I realized that I would have to do that today. I would need to shoot a podcast today. I'm sorry, it's early. It's ADHD deep dive. We're already showing clear proof of the ADHD. I'm burned out. It's been a long week. But while complaining about jobs and working and stress of income, I figured that would be a good opportunity for me to talk about my history with income and employment. And I thought, you know, maybe it would be a fun idea to go through the jobs that I've had, explain some of the burnout that I experienced in those jobs, and kind of catch you up on how I got to where I am today, somehow being more broke than I've ever been, but technically more fulfilled than I have been. Sorry, this angle is just, it's bothering me, and Judah's freaking out. She's sniffing all over the room. Judah, could you lay down, please? You're driving me crazy, making me a little anxious. Anywho, let's talk about jobs, folks, huh? Shall we?
Get a job?
Yeah.
Just get a job? Why don't I strap on my job helmet and squeeze down into a job cannon and fire off into Jobland, where jobs grow on jobbies?
Let's talk about employment. So, you know, you hear me complain about, quote, poverty and being poor and being broke. I know that there's a language thing there that a lot of people say that you shouldn't say the word poor. I've heard some people use, I don't remember who it was, basically put out the expression, like, you're not poor, you're broke. And I have tried to change my attitude about my finances since I heard that. I'm going through a period of not having money. I'm not a, quote, poor person. So I'm currently broke, not poor. Trying to remember that. However, some of my first real concrete memories of money, and how that plays a role in your life was honestly right around the 2008-2009 the housing crisis, the recession. I don't remember very many details about the actual inner workings of how it all went down at the house, but I remember that my parents were very stressed during that time. And I just remember money came up in conversation around the house a lot more. And they started to realize that we were slipping from the middle class American life to lower middle class into the poor working class. But again, I didn't know anything about it. 2008, 2009, I was 8th grade, 9th grade. You know, I knew that Obama was president and that some people were really excited about that and some people were really upset about that. That is the full extent of my political knowledge, and that's about it. But at that point, there was a discussion about, like, well, when does David work then? Like me. My parents weren't asking me to get a job or anything because, again, I think you're, what, 12, 13, 14 around that age or around those grades, 9th grade, 8th grade. And it wasn't actually until my senior year of high school that I got my first legitimate on-the-books job. But before that, I would say that my first job that I was told to go out and do work for, even though there was no income applied, was doing the choose and cut for Christmas trees during the Christmas season. the church that I was a part of, the youth group, typically ended up getting involved with a tree farm local to the area. And we had some people going out and cutting down the trees, and some people dragging them back to the customers' cars, and sometimes putting them up on top of the cars. And then you gotta throw it through that little thing that when you put the tree in, it wraps it all in that like mesh netting and stuff. So it's basically just following people around this massive tens of acres, maybe hundreds of acres, I don't know size, pine tree farm. Well, it's not just pine trees, but Christmas tree farm, and helping them pick their Christmas trees for the year. But again, that wasn't paid or anything. It was just part of the youth group volunteer stuff that we used to do it with my church. But I remember the person who owned the tree farm, his name was Steve. And I remember, you know, a big part of Christianity and being a member of the church and a member of the society as a member of church is, you know, good works, putting in the work for your community to serve and give back to your community. But I was a lazy kid. I had no interest in doing what I was doing, especially because I'm pretty sure I was pretty out of shape. I was pretty heavy at the time. And I was just not having a particularly good time. And my friend Mark and I were in the back of Steve's truck moving from one cluster of trees to another. And I said something along the lines of, like, I don't know, I was just trying to fit into conversation. So I was trying to feign happiness and enjoyment. I was trying to pretend as though I was having a good time. So I said something along the lines of, like, I do not typically enjoy manual. No, it was, I'm not usually a manual labor type of guy, but I think I'm having fun. And then Steve slams on the brakes. He turns his head back around. He goes, "Let me get a good look at you." And he just kind of looks me up and down, which just with the shameful, judging face. And I basically got a spiel about what I just told you, that, like, it is my job as a, quote, Christian man, to serve my community, to put in good works, to work hard, manual skilled labor and all that. And from that point on, my life has been about working ever since. It's because I realized in that moment that for the rest of time, I would forever be shamed if I did not have a job or something that kept me busy that was designed to pay me. So I want to say it was another year or two after that that I got my first real job working at America's finest dining establishment, McDonald's. Oh boy, what an experience working at McDonald's was. Let's see. So I was probably 16 or 17 by this time. Judah, no barking, please. Judah, I'm trying to tell a story about jobs. That's enough. So I want to say I was 16 or 17 at this time. There's really no setup to how one gets a job at McDonald's. You fill out an application and then you turn it in, and that's how you get a job at McDonald's. There's no screening process. And now I am not even saying that McDonald's work is unskilled labor or, you know, I don't see it as a shameful job in the way that many people, including let's just say I don't view it in the same way that other people do. A, because I did the work, and B, because that shit's actually kind of difficult and thankless. So I believe that, quote, minimum wage jobs need to be worth a lot more. We need to be paid a lot more. Anyways, I was just a kid. I think for the most part, I was just doing drive-through at the beginning. The whole time I worked there, I never worked on a fryer. I mean, I dropped like fries in the deep fryer, but I was never grilling burgers. I was never on the line making food. I was either up at the front counter. and then like bagging stuff up and getting drinks, or I was doing the drive-thru. And that was only for like a few weeks before I found out that the current maintenance guy was leaving. And if you know anything about me, you know that I am not well equipped for a maintenance job of any sort. But the maintenance position for McDonald's happened to pay, I think, $3 more than I was making at the time. And I had only been there for a few weeks. So I was like, oh my gosh, I'm a 16-year-old and I'm about to get a promotion. Little did I know that promotion would be even more thankless, more difficult, and would ultimately lead me to my most dramatic quitting of any job so far to date. Basically, as a maintenance guy at McDonald's, you're like just fixing shit, doing scrub work. I mean, going through cleaning bathrooms, cleaning vats and fryers. Tuesdays and Thursdays were always nice. I think those were the days that the truck would come in. Maybe it was 2 days during the week that truck would come in, which is like the stock. So I'd spend my whole 5 or 6 hour shift just loading up the freezer. Actually, you know what? I think I had to have been 17 or 18 when I got this job, because by the time that I became the maintenance job or the maintenance guy, I think I was 18, because you had to be. And that's why it worked out so well, is because I was like, whatever, the fresh 18-year-old who was ready to take on a job that he didn't realize sucked as bad as it did. Anyways, yeah, I was spending most of my days inside the freezer and cooler, getting boxes off of a truck and loading it all up and stacking it and rotating product. And I would just listen to music while I did that, honestly. And I'm pretty sure I would also steal frozen cookies. Or frozen pies or whatever. You know, they're worth like 16 cents and McDonald's only charges like a dollar for them. So, you know, I wasn't breaking the McDonald's corporation by occasionally stealing a frozen cookie. But that's the type of employee I was. That's the type of kid I was, being interested in working for this bullshit fast food restaurant. And really, there's nothing. I'm spending a lot of time on McDonald's here. When ultimately it was a very short-lived job. I just remember that the day that I quit, it was essentially, again, I'm the maintenance guy. I don't have anything to do with the food. And now at this point, I'm not even doing drive-thru or the front counter. I'm just the maintenance guy. So I have no typical customer interaction. Other than like answering the occasional question. Anyway, this lady was throwing a fit late at night because apparently she got ketchup on her burger. Or maybe she needed pickles or something. I don't remember. She needed some ingredient that she did not get. And she was so upset that she crushed up the burger and threw it at my face over the counter. When I was just trying to explain that, like, I didn't make it. I didn't take her order. I had nothing to do with it. But I will get somebody's attention. She just crushed up the burger and threw it in my face. And that was after a long week of just, or a long time of me being annoyed and upset and hating the job. And I mean, it's McDonald's. Come on. So I took the burger that she threw at my face, I crumpled it up in my hand, and I turned around and I threw it at a wall that ended up being a pretty thin slab of drywall, and the burger went through the wall. And so when I saw the hole, I realized in that moment, I need to quit or I will be fired. And that was that job. That was that job. That was my experience with McDonald's. And I do not remember the gap in between, but at some point I ended up getting another job at another restaurant. This one was a local little diner in the town I grew up called Food Factory. More quote fine dining, but it just wasn't fast food is all I really mean by that. You know, one of my favorite things that this place made was a little object called Frickles. Hang on. All right, before the dog started barking, I don't particularly remember where I was at in this story, but I do remember that I was talking about Food Factory. So if I'm repeating myself, I apologize. I worked at a restaurant called Food Factory. In this job, I was hired as a busboy. So wash dishes, help do some food prep, clean. That's about it. Again, thankless job. I'm hiding in the back. I'm starting to realize maybe there was a pattern of people trying to hide me from the customer base at this point. I don't know. Maybe it's just the fact that I have a couple of jobs a little too early and, you know, they don't want to put kids who don't have jobs. I mean, I say I'm a kid. I'm freaking 18, 19 at this point. I mean, how old am I when I have these jobs? It feels like it was forever ago, but really it was only 10, 11 years ago. That's insane. That feels weird to me. But anyways, the cool, I don't know if it's a cool thing, but I got free food at this place. And one of my favorite foods on the face of the earth was a food that I was introduced to through Food Factory. And it's called Frickles. It's essentially deep fried pickles in a wonton wrap. But in Food Factory, they deep fried, they took a wonton wrap. Then they took a piece of ham. Then they took a piece of Swiss cheese. Then they put the big dill pickle in there, roll it up, tuck it in, deep fry it. Then you have a nice little broken cross section. You get to dip that in ranch or blue cheese or just whatever type of sauce you want. God dang. Yeah, so I've pretty much stolen that recipe. I don't know if it's a typical thing. I know that fried pickles are a thing, but I don't do ham, you know, because I'm a veggie boy. But a wonton wrap, Swiss cheese, and then pickles, and then fry that, dip it in some ranch or blue cheese. So, yeah, that was Food Factory. While working at Food Factory, I got a job at what I still kind of call one of my favorite jobs that I ever worked. And that was at the time, it was the Cadillac 5 movie theater in Cadillac, Michigan. It is now the Cadillac 4 theater. It was a Goodrich quality theater. I don't know what type of theater it is now. I don't know if it got bought out by a different company. Anyway, this was a great job. And there was actually room in that place to move up, which I did. And I loved. I got hired in just as a regular staffer. Sorry, Gus is like leaning his head on a pillow, so he's breathing really loudly. So that's probably piercing through the audio. He breathes like an old man and it drives me fucking crazy. Anyway, movie theater. Just a staffer at the start, which is your typical movie theater gig. Sell tickets, sell popcorn, sell candy, hang out, wait for a little bit. Stock, then when the movie's out, clean the theater, cycle, rinse, repeat over and over and over again, every single movie. But the cool part about that was you got a free movie every week, every month. Maybe it was every week. I think it was every week because a new movie would come out all the time. Yeah, you could do a free movie a week. And I think you maybe even got two tickets so you could do a guest pass. So you could go to the movies with somebody else. And then you got an employee deal of popcorn and soda. So that was sweet. It was a great gig. And then at a certain point, a manager's position opened up. And I was realizing that I loved the job enough that I would, I mean, at this point, I'm definitely not 21, maybe 20. And I go out for my first manager's position and I get it and I get the job. Actually, I think there were a few different rounds. At one point, maybe I did not get the position, but then the person who got the position ended up leaving. So they ended up hiring a manager again, and then I ended up getting that position. And I lived that out for a while. That was kind of a cool gig because, again, the perks of like being at the movies while being a guy who's like interested in films and acting and television at this point. I'm not making like movies or films or this type of content with my own camera. Actually, that's not true. I was doing like little comedy sketches and stuff with my friend Mark at the time, but I definitely wasn't taking it as seriously as I'm taking it now. I didn't know what I wanted to do. I still don't know what I want to do, but I knew it had something to do with movies and acting and storytelling. And at that theater, just constantly seeing a new story every single week or multiple was great. And at this job, I feel fancy because I'm a 20-year-old and I'm in a suit. All the managers wore button-downs, suits and ties, dress pants, dress shoes. Actually, my first day going from a manager in training, when you're still in like the old school conventional, like usher's getup, where you've got like the vest and the bow tie and the white button down underneath. You end up going full suit and tie and all that. Anyways, my first day as a manager in the suit was opening day of the theatrical release of the 50 Shades of Grey movie. And wow, what a day that was. A, it was ridiculously stressful because it's my first day as a manager and there are hundreds and hundreds of women, mostly like middle-aged or older women, filing through, just creating chaos in a small little town's movie theater. And B, there was a couple old ladies that grabbed my ass that night as I'm like ushering them into the theater or on their way out or whatever, because they're all horned up from the freaking BDSM film that they just watched, the softcore porn that they watched in a movie theater where other people watch, you know, children's movies or action flicks. Anyway, yeah, that was a strange day. I got derailed by the memories of my ass getting slapped by old ladies excited to see 50 Shades of Grey. So I actually did not want to leave that job. I really enjoyed it, and I was actually with somebody at the time who was technically my, you know, there was a power dynamic thing where I was a manager and somebody else who was working there, who I was seeing before I became a manager, or before I was officially a manager, we were dating and, there was a whole thing where I got a job offer and we wanted to be like publicly dating each other, but at the time managers could not be dating any of the just staffers or employees that worked there. And so in order to be public, I left that job for the other job, which I was working at the time. It wasn't actually a job offer. I was working two jobs. And this is when I got the job, which I've mentioned a few times on the podcast for 9 and 10 News at the news station. So at the time, I'm working as a manager at the theater and I'm working in the operations department at the news station. And I wanted to be public with my girlfriend at the time. And so I took the pay hit. I wanted to continue to work both jobs because I actually liked them at the time. I say at the time because I learned to loathe 9 and 10 News. Am I actually right? Have I missed anything? I left some notes. Have I skipped a job? Oh, I did. I forgot. At the time while I was working Food Factory and the movie theater, because I was working both of them at the same time before I got the manager's position at the movie theater. I was just working Food Factory and the staff position at the movie theater. I also picked up a day a week at Pizza Hut. So I was in the back making, again, I'm in the back. Not a server or anything. I'm just making pizzas. And I think over the course of a month, I think I worked maybe two or three shifts, and wow, I'm realizing another job that I had that I kind of totally forgot about. Anyways, I ended up leaving Pizza Hut because I wasn't getting any shifts and it was demoralizing work anyways, and I hated that shit. There was something about being in the back of a kitchen at a Pizza Hut while a child is having their birthday party out front and I'm being yelled at for $7.40 an hour, something like that, whatever the minimum wage was in Michigan. Anyways, quit that very quickly. Same scenario with the establishment GameStop. I actually got hired there in high school. It was the first job. I forgot that. Well, no, it wasn't the first job I ever had. It must have been the second job that I had, because this might have been right around the time that I quit McDonald's. I applied for GameStop, which was 20-25 minutes away. I got one shift over the course of a month. Forgot everything that I learned by the second shift, so then I got overwhelmed and I quit. Later on, because I'm not even going to mention it when it happens, at some point later on, I got rehired by GameStop, that same GameStop, same manager and everything. Same thing happened. I worked one shift over the course of a month, finally came back from a second one, got overwhelmed because I didn't remember anything, then I quit. So I don't remember when the second one happened. Maybe it'll come up while I'm talking about it. But I really fucked over that one GameStop by even the manager was a friend too. So she like stuck her neck out for me because she's like, I know he only came and worked one shift, but here's the why. Let's hire him back. They hire me back. I do the same thing. So anyways, yeah, that all happened. Flash forward to where we were just talking about the movie theater. I quit the movie theater. I end up now just working in the operations department at 9 and 10 News. Nine and 10 News was referred to as Northern Michigan's news leader. They had a local-ish competitor in Traverse City called 7 and 4 News, but they were technically different beats, different parts of Michigan, but 9 and 10 News went a little bit more south, and 7 and 4 went a little bit further into the UP, but they were basically direct competitors. I want to say 7 and 4 was ABC and 9 and 10 was CBS. Anyways, when I got hired in, I was in the operations department, which meant a few things for my job. Actually, when I first started, I was working... Oh, yeah, that's why I quit the movie theater as well, because I was working the morning shift, which meant my shifts were from 4 in the morning to noon at 9 and 10 News, and then I would work... 3:30 or 4 o'clock at the movie theater to pretty much midnight, go home, sleep for 3 hours, 3.5 hours, wake up, drive to the news station, do it all over again. And I wasn't full-time at both places, but I was 8 hours when I did work at these places. I was part-time working 50 or 60 hours, but you know, it's each in, I was working part-time for both jobs for a total of like 50, 60 hours a week, which was fine. It just the sleep didn't work. And again, I wanted to be public with this person. So, you know, I've heard from many a people, and I don't believe that this is true, because if you've listened to past episodes, you know that I'm a bit flighty and I don't like staying in one job or one position or doing one thing for a long time. At this time, I'm running morning cams for the morning news, which was actually a great crew of people at the time. I really liked the newscasters for that show and the whole team. Because when you're like part of a morning show, you kind of got to have a good atmosphere because everybody's groggy, everybody's shitty, and one little poorly adjusted attitude can throw off everybody's day. So we're all kind of very aware that we're all kind of tired. We're trying to be kind of silly with each other so we can just kind of let loose. I really liked that gig. So in between the morning show, which I think was a 4 or 5 hour show, I don't remember, it was a longer show. I would then go into this room. I don't remember what the room was called, but essentially it was the primary operations room, where I would be, I want to say like time programming out commercial breaks for the day, and like manually triggering some commercials if I needed to, and doing studio prep for the noon show. I would shoot the noon show and then I go home. Then I got promoted to full time with 9 and 10 News, but this meant leaving the morning show and going to the evening show. So I would come in, I want to say 2:30 or so, and then leave right after. Right after 11:30, I'd shut down the studio, 11:30 at night after the 11 o'clock news went. So I'd be there for whatever, the 4 o'clock news, the 5 o'clock news. Then there was a different affiliate broadcasting, like basically 9 and 10 News was a CBS affiliate. And then they also shot a different show that was a Fox affiliate, which was basically just a shorter version of what the whole 9 and 10 News show was. This is all inner workings, but you came to this podcast, you wanted to listen. And if you're here, if you've made it this far, thank you. I appreciate you. You didn't have to be here for this. Anyways, yeah, it's same thing, though. Running locked off cameras in the studio, you know, occasionally moving them to adjust a shot. And then when one of the newscasters wouldn't be speaking, I'd take that camera and rotate it over to the green screen so that the weatherman could do his segment. And it was that. day after day after day after day after day after day after day. Nothing changed except for the news that the reporters were reporting. And so that was a real solid glimpse of I needed a change. A solid glimpse into my life of needing to change. And at that point, I basically begged to get a different job at 9 and 10 News, which was direct photojournalism, which I'm not really going to hammer this one out because I've talked about it in previous episodes. But for those who haven't listened to those episodes, I'll give a brief description. Essentially, when you see a reporter reporting anywhere other than the studio, so if they're out at a fire or they're out at an event and speaking to people on the street or whatever, the person holding the camera is the photojournalist, the person that you don't see. And that was me. Man, lots of positions where they're hiding my face. I thought every time I get a little insecure about how I look, I reach out to some friends who validate me and they tell me, you know, David, you stop it, you sexy bald man. But then now upon reflection, I've been hidden from the public for a long time. I'm going to need to do some self-work on realizing why that is. Anyways, photojournalists, they're going everywhere reporters are. They're doing all the same work reporters are. The difference is in the social media age, they get a lot more of the blowback. I mean, I'm sure they got a lot more of the blowback before social media. But, like, we're doing the same job, except nobody knows who I am. And there's a comfort sometimes there if you're doing a controversial story. But when you're a narcissist like me, I want the attention. And I did not receive that when I worked as a photojournalist. That was rough. That wasn't actually rough. I mean, it was personally annoying, but it had nothing to do with the reason that I quit the job. I quit the job because it was fucking demoralizing. I would work from 2:30 to 11 o'clock. And if I got back to the studio after a long day at 10:55 p.m. and there were no other photojournalists in the building and there was a fire 2 hours away, I'm the one who has to go drive. Mandatory overtime, doesn't matter. We need the story for the station. I am a cog in a machine. And at this point, this is when they started making photojournalists sign 2-year contracts. So I was stuck. I couldn't leave. Well, I thought that I couldn't leave. I did end up quitting because that job was just so, I don't know. I've talked about this many times that I feel like I should talk about it a little bit here. Just, it was so, again, thankless, demanding, very stressful, demoralizing in that, like, if I would go to a case, I use this particular example all the time because this is the one that made me feel the worst, but it was basically a murder case that had gone unsolved for years and years and years. I want to say that a girl had her mother was murdered or something like that. And then after all this time, they finally find the killer and I'm there reporting at the courthouse. And this woman is now a grown woman who's lost her mother decades ago. And I have to, like, while she's crying and, you know, dealing with this unresolved trauma with no closure after decades yet, I have to, like, run up to her and shove my camera in her face because my boss is in my ear telling her I need a soundbite from her so we can air it for the 5 o'clock news. And he's basically telling me, like, get whatever sound out of her you can. I don't care if you have to ambush her, just go ask her a question. So I basically was, like, asking her in different words, how do you feel now that you know that there might be, well, whatever. It was gross because she's just crying and that kind of thing you had to do all the time because it's just a cutthroat industry. You've got to get the sound bite because if you don't get the sound bite, somebody else will. And if somebody else gets a better sound bite, they're going to get more clicks to their website. If they get more clicks to their website, then the advertisers are going to come to that website more. And if the advertisers go to their website more, they're not going to come to our website more. So we need you to get this sound bite. Everything rests on my shoulders except for pay to properly compensate me for it. I was contracted at $11.50 an hour. And then overtime, which was mandatory, was, I want to say, just an extra $2 an hour. So it wasn't even time and a half. It was like an extra $2 or $3. So at most, I got to make about $14 an hour while doing the exact same work that somebody who made like $30, $40 an hour did. But, you know, they had to have people on Facebook telling them that they were fake news, and they had to go to college for it. So, boo-hoo. Anyways, I ended up quitting that job. I ended up breaking my contract, which essentially meant that they took all of my remaining PTO that I had, because if I used the PTO, then they, what is the phrase? They garnish your wages or something like that for, I basically had to pay out in order to quit. I had to pay them for me to quit. So since I quit, all of the wages that would have been made from my PTO were then removed. I don't remember specifically how it was, or maybe I used too much PTO, and because I hadn't worked to accrue it back, they cut that from my final wages. So my last 2 weeks worked were for nothing. I think they literally took my entire paycheck. So that was fun. My mental health was collapsing. I had no job. I had no money. And at this point, I'm starting to realize that the person I'm with, I'm not going to be with for very much longer. We're not getting along. At this point, I start to see the cycle of poverty or brokenness introduce itself into my life, because it feels like at this point, I've been working and working and working and working and working for nothing. And there's no goal yet. I don't know what I want to do. I've just been working these different bullshit odds and end jobs, not staying in any particular job for longer than a year and a half. And my partner and I hate each other, and I'm stuck. I have ambitions, no direction. And I don't exactly know what I'm going to do next, because I've quit this job. Because if I didn't quit this job, quite frankly, I was considering killing myself. So, like, being be employed and then die, or quit and then want to kill yourself more. I made the right decision. I'm alive. But yeah, that period of time started a rough streak. I feel like I'm really stretching this out, so I should probably maybe speed through these a little bit faster. But that's okay, because I've talked about a lot more of these later jobs a little bit more recently in some other episodes. So at this point, I put feelers out to some friends and family asking for jobs. Okay, let me restart that. So at this point, I basically put out some feelers to some friends and family asking for jobs or recommendations or suggestions or whatever. And if you listened to my most recent episode with my the guest who was my former teacher, Rich Spicer, he also worked with me at 9 and 10 News and sent me the information for the Interlochen Arts Academy, which again, I've talked about in another episode, but we'll do it again today. Which is a private arts school for, it's just a private art school, for music and acting and directing and individual breakdowns of those. So for acting, there's theatrical acting, filmmaking, and for music, there's, you know, each instrument and orchestra and jazz and performance, and then there's dance and all these types of things. But it's out in the middle of the woods, in the middle of nowhere, in Interlochen, Michigan. They needed an intern. It was a paid internship, but they needed an intern for, I can't remember the actual year or season. Maybe it was 2017, 2018. I think it was something like that. Or maybe it was before that, 2016, 2017. Yeah, that sounds more right. 2016, 2017. Photos and video, photo video intern. So that just meant me going around campus and documenting the events and classes and curriculum that was taking place. Got to see a lot of cool bands, teach master classes there. I got to absorb a lot of the same information that these students were, you know, whose students' families were paying tens of thousands of dollars in tuition to learn. And that was an amazing job. I did not want that job to end. I learned so much from that job. There was huge theatrical productions that I got to be a part of shooting as part of a team. So I learned a lot about what it was like to actually capture these productions. There was a lot of like mini documentaries about events. So I got to learn about styling documentaries to tell a story. And basically, they were either going to hire someone who knew nothing and truly get an intern, or they were going to hire somebody who knew a little bit about what they were doing. And at this point, I had shot a little bit with 9 and 10 News, and I had shot these comedy sketches on little Sony bloggies or whatever digital cameras I had at the time. And so they ultimately decided that someone with a little bit of knowledge would be better for that particular season, because they had a lot of work that they wanted to do. So to teach someone from the ground up would have been a little too difficult. But that was only a year, a school year internship. So I want to say I got hired in like October or November, right before the 2016 election, because that's when I quit 9 and 10 News, because that was the height of the, well, maybe not even the height, but that was the real violent beginnings of your fake news. Everything you say is not to be trusted. And anyways, this is more passive, kind, nice atmosphere to shoot video and photo. But that job only went till graduation day. My last day was shooting the graduation ceremony in the morning and then going through and making sure that there was a photo for every single student that year. And then as soon as I put those onto the computer, I turned in my badge, locked all my stuff up, and left. That was it. And at the time, because that was Monday, Wednesday, Friday, I think Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, I was working at a bookstore. This one's really funny. But yeah, I would work part-time. I was usually working two part-time jobs at the same time. And when that interlocking job ended, I realized how rough this bookstore job was, because I didn't give a shit about what I was doing at that place. And I finally got a real taste of what it was like to be doing what you want to do for your career. And I mean, it was cool in the sense that, like, I decided that I was going to start getting into reading again. And this was fresh off of the 2016 election. So I was reading a lot of political news, or reading a lot of political literature. and so it was good to just kind of catch back up on reading. I don't know what I'm trying to say here. I'm trying to maybe sugarcoat this job in some way, but it was nothing special. All that to say, I was actually fired from that job. That job was the first time I was ever fired. The entirety of the building was carpet, except for this one little chunk of tile behind the counter where the employees stood. And I apparently was not particularly good at sweeping that tile area. And that was enough to fire me. I just was pulled into the back room one day and they said, we've had some issues with the way that you clean the place, and you're really not sweeping up that back area like we'd like you to. So unfortunately, we're going to have to let you go. Yeah. So now this is just weeks after the interlocking thing ends too. So I'm in this slump of a depression from having, again, a glimpse of a job that It's like, let me try to rephrase this again. A glimpse of what it's like to have a job that you enjoy, to then have that job end only to be in a job that you hate, that you are then fired from. that one still gets to me sometimes, because like, why'd you fire me? Why was I fired? I sold books. I sold coffee. I sold tea. I had great rapport with the customers. I was even great at cleaning the rest of the place. But apparently, without warning, I was fired for not sweeping well enough. So that's a bit of, I don't even know if it's a bummer. It just really gets to be sometimes. Why? Ah. Okay, all right, let's speed through this last little chunk. After the bookstore is the first time I get my real, well, actually the 9 and 10 news job was a legit job, but the next job I got was for a bank, Fifth Third Bank. If you're not from this area or you're not familiar with Fifth Third Bank, yes, it is the improper fraction 5/3, because their thing is we do banking a fifth third better. We do it better than you by more than 2/3 of a whole. So we're Fifth Third. I don't know. It's shitty marketing, I've always thought. It's such a dumb name for a bank. Anyways, at that job, I was just a teller. I say just a teller, but I was a teller. So you'd come in. You know what tellers do. Do I really need to explain to you what tellers do? I'm getting irritated now because I'm going through all these jobs that I hated and I'm reliving the miserable attitude they gave me. I handle basic cash deposits and withdrawals, basic transactions that you would do at a bank. I try to recommend people that they get our credit card or take out a loan so that I can get points for getting the bank more money. And that was it, really. I mean, it was a year of that. It was just a job. It was a job that I did not care about, but they paid me money. But again, I'm just stuck in this trap of doing something that I hate, and I don't really have time or the energy to be making things anymore. Again, my partner and I are very rapidly approaching a split that we knew was coming. So I'm just all around miserable. I'm miserable at work. I'm miserable at home. And then as soon as my partner and I split, I realized I had no reason to even be here in Cadillac anymore. I say here, I'm not in Cadillac now, but I had no reason to be in Cadillac anymore. So as soon as we split up, I quit Fifth Third. I actually moved downstate for a couple of months to stay with my sister so that I could save up money to go to New York. Because I knew I needed to do something ambitious and lofty. I needed to take a risk. I needed to do something big. And New York was just about the biggest thing that I could do. But before that point, I had gone back to serving. Not gone back to serving. I think this is actually my first time serving, if I remember correctly. So in this little town, which was Mason, Michigan, for what it's worth, I picked up a job at a little restaurant called City Limits. I really don't have anything bad to say about that. I want to say I made more money serving there at that job than I made from like most of the jobs that I worked that were considered legitimate. So this is the bank included, 9 and 10 News, Northern Michigan's news leader. I was getting paid more as a server at a dinky little restaurant, which half of it was bowling alley. I mean, more money at this place where half of it was a bowling alley and that we served sloppy pizza and fries and chicken sandwiches to drunk people than I did as a photojournalist breaking hard news at Northern Michigan's news leader. I love capitalism. I love it. Anyways, that helped me save enough money to then move to New York. And when I got to New York, I had made all these plans ahead of time. I had gotten in contact with somebody through an app to make sure I had a place lined up. I knew how I was going to get there. I knew how or where I was going to live. I started figuring out the like public transit system before I ever moved out. So like how I downloaded the transit apps for like figuring out when the trains and the buses ran. I did everything that I would need to do to prepare except for have a job before moving down there. I had no job when moving down there. I had saved just enough money to pay for all of the things that I would need right off the bat. And then when I got there, I think I had like maybe $200 or $300 and that's it, but no job for a few weeks, I want to say. And this is where the career kind of starts speeding up a little bit, where I start to refine a little bit, start understanding a little bit more about what I want to do. And it's at this point that I took on a couple of acting gigs. I paid for the service backstage.com, which is essentially just Craigslist for acting gigs. Picked up a few, did it sort of part-time for the first few months, and was actually working. I had a few paid acting gigs. Nothing for anything real substantive, just a few like indie projects. But it was not steady enough, and I did not know how to do that full time, especially with having two dogs out in New York City. That was the biggest mistake. Was, and it wasn't a mistake. I want to reword that, because I would be lost without my dogs. My dogs literally saved my life in New York City. There's a whole video on that. But it was just the wrong move to go to New York City with two dogs. It was a very difficult task. And when you're an actor, days are long. I couldn't afford a dog sitter or a dog walker or anything like that. I didn't know my roommate enough yet at the time to feel comfortable just like asking them to walk the dogs or take care of them all day. And so it was just too hard to continue the acting thing with the dogs. And so at this point I get the acting thing full time, at least. So at this point I pick up a couple of gigs, which is hosting trivia all over Manhattan, and an escape room. Technically, I think, unless they were just bullshitting us, I think it is technically either New York City's or America's largest escape room. That thing, it was really intense. We had a few different games. There was a DC Batman's Joker themed game called Joker's Cafe, where you'd like, basically the Joker kidnapped some kids and you gotta like rescue the kids, but you have to like solve a bunch of really fucked up mysteries and puzzles in order to find them. And you'd have to like climb under stuff and like climb up on top, and like it was extensive. There was big rooms, ladders and stuff you had to climb. There was a game called Bullets and Broken Hearts, which was a Sin City themed game. Same thing. It was like, there was like mystery trap doors and ladders you'd have to climb, and like building like walls you'd have to scale. It was a very intense, it was the first escape room I'd ever seen. I'd never seen, or I think I'd heard of an escape room, but I had never participated in one. So then having never done those and then working at this one was pretty crazy. And then, one of the craziest games, two of the craziest games was, St. Angelo's Castle, which was basically you and a bunch of monks. You were a monk and you were hooded. Basically were dragged through the dark into this mysterious place, and then had to escape via candlelight only. You were basically held in a dungeon, and you have to escape by just these little like tiny battery-powered light bulbs that you had. That was a really cool one. And then the most fucked up was this game called Boxed Up, where it's literally... The essential story is there's two people, there's boxes stacked in an L shape, casket shaped boxes, sitting side by side in an L shape, head to head. And you had 45 minutes to escape the boxes as the two of you. So just to provide context for what that place even was, that was a cool gig. I got to watch people try to escape that. After a while, it becomes routine and you understand the games and you start realizing that people are going to make the same mistakes. So you're essentially just a babysitter for people playing a game after a long while. But that, in conjunction with hosting trivia all over Manhattan to crowds of sometimes hundreds. And that would be like themed trivia too. So it'd be like Friends trivia or The Office trivia, or at the time this was the height of Game of Thrones, so it was Game of Thrones trivia. Different types of Harry Potter trivia, to huge groups. And at the escape room, I met freaking Will Smith. I met Joey King doing trivia. I had met like guest stars from The Office and Friends, like doing Office and Friends trivia. They were participating in these trivia. It was a really cool, surreal experience that I got to do that and be an event host in New York City, living out my, I don't know if it's my dream, but it was really cool. And then at a certain point, lo and behold, I ended up realizing it was too difficult to be out there with the dogs, and I ended up coming back. And before back to Michigan, and before I figure out exactly where it is I'm going to land, I stay with my sister again, and I work at that same restaurant. Then I was a silly boy, I gotta be honest. And I made a trip up north back to my hometown to see some old friends, met a girl. Then when I went back to my sister's house, I stayed there for a little while and realized that I liked that girl too much. And so I had to move back home to the place I so desperately wanted to leave in the first place. I had to go back home so that I could be with this girl, who we ended up breaking up about a month later. So that was fun and awesome. Right? So cool. And at the time, I was actually working at a restaurant. So I moved from Mason, living in that area, working at that restaurant. I think I actually picked up a couple of shifts at a different restaurant as well when I had moved back from New York City. So I was doing two different serving gigs. But that's not really even all that worth diving into because it's just another serving job. So from there, I moved back up north to Cadillac and work at this restaurant that I'm actually working at the restaurant with the girl that I'm dating. We end up breaking up while we're both working there, and it's awkward and awful and terrible, and we're fighting the whole time, and we're annoying all of our coworkers, and it's just weird in there. It just created a gross, tense, awkward, uncomfortable atmosphere, and I didn't want to be back there in the first place. Why did I move back to Cadillac just to date this girl? Why did I do that? And then, of course, another girl comes along, because that's how life works, right? You move from crush to crush to crush to crush, and then find out eventually you're probably better off being single anyway, which I think, you know, is this period that I'm existing in right now, or whatever. We're not talking about love and relationships right now. We're talking about jobs. But anyways, I end up dating this other girl who convinced me to leave the restaurant so that the awkward tension was no longer there with my ex. And then at this point, I get a job at another bank as another teller, doing the teller position, just at a different bank from when I worked the first time I lived in this town. 1 month into this job, 2020, March. Shall I even explain? Yeah, the pandemic hit. Okay. We all know what happened at that point. Everybody got fired. Everybody got let go. All the businesses shuttered right at the beginning. We all thought that the world was ending. And this bank is still open, but it's drive-through only, and they're laying off like 95% of its staff. And so at that point, I'm one of those people who initially really, really, really panicked at the beginning of the pandemic. That really, that was a real crisis for me and my partner at the time. We ended up having a great relationship through the pandemic, truly. Like, I don't necessarily have any complaints about our relationship. We were very kind to each other. We took care of each other. We were very supportive. Especially of each other's anxieties and worries about the pandemic itself through the pandemic. But at this time, you know, stores are starting to subtly flirt with how they're going to explore reopening, because after that first few weeks when we all realize that this is going to be around here for a lot longer than we thought, we can't just shut all the business doors. We got to open some of them back up. And so the delivery apps started coming into that town. And so I picked up a few of those, the Shipt, the DoorDash, the Grubhub, the Uber Eats, that kind of stuff. And then what was it? May or June was when those first stimulus checks came out. And that was when I bought the camera that I'm using right now, with the microphone that I'm using right now, with the tripod that I'm using right now, with the laptop that I will be using to edit. I bought all that stuff with the stimulus money. And then from there on, I've been doing what I'm doing right now, unless I have any other freaking notes that I forgot about. Yeah. At this point, you've caught up. So currently, I'm a self-employed freelance cinematographer, photographer. You know, I also do the delivery apps. I'm technically making less money right now than I have I don't know if I'll use the word ever, but I'm, yeah, because I definitely made less at McDonald's and I definitely made less as a busboy. But I'm not making a lot of money right now. So this, I'm not rolling in it. This is not a fruitful career path for those who are looking to roll in dough. The first few years of starting this has been stressful. I'm building up a client base. I'm establishing myself as a creator in a highly competitive industry. And in my spare time, I deliver groceries for people who are too lazy to go out and get them, who don't really appreciate the value of tipping properly. And that's where we're at. And hopefully there will never be an episode where I have to talk about other jobs after this point, because in theory, this is what I will now do for the rest of time. Whatever this is, cinematography, photography, videography, event hosting, whatever. I would just like to get away from the delivery apps so that I can start refining the career of the passion projects, figuring out a way to make passion projects work for me financially as well. But I'm getting there. And just like you, I've just got to keep going. So thanks for tuning in this episode. Those were my jobs. I am your bald host, and I'll see you next week.